Big show for you here today. Frank Schwab joins us to continue our Teams, the Shape, the Draft series. Who needs to have that 2017 Saints franchise-changing draft? Well, a lot of teams, but we focus in on six, three from each conference. What do the Texans need to do to build around C.J. Stroud? Should the Bengals just hammer defense all throughout the draft? Do they have a couple of needs on the offensive side of the football? And are the Rams potentially one another big draft away from just being a true blue contender in the NFC? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, April 8th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Yahoo Sports Zone, I mean, true legend of the company. It is Frank Schwab. Frank, what's going on, buddy?
Every time, you got to give me a hard time about that. I'll give you a hard time about all the podcasts I hear you on, other than like anything. Like it could be, you know, Martha Stewart cooking, and all of a sudden it's like, we got Matt Harmon now to talk about Luther Burden's draft stock. So, you know, we'll give each other a hard time for the legends that we think each other are.
Well, I'll tell you what, Frank, if Martha Stewart wants to have me on her podcast, and I know her people are listening,
you would do it. Is there a podcast you've ever turned down? Because I don't think there is. I don't want to
get into it on air, but there's definitely been some. There has definitely been some that I've turned down. And I'm actually being better this offseason, Frank, about protecting my time and saying no to some guest spots, just because I got a lot going on, and you know, Yahoo Sports deserves my attention. So like, I can't be sacrificing.
You guys are cranking out. I texted you the other day. You guys are doing great. I listen, you know, I when you and Charles McDonald were talking about running backs, I was engaged. I was in it. I loved it. So you guys obviously do a great job. I love listening to your stuff, and I'm very, very happy to be on today, because just like talking ball with you, man.
Absolutely. And that is what we are going to do today. We're going to talk some ball, and we are going to continue our Teams That Shape the Draft series. Today, we're looking at teams that are one-ish pick away from a true contender status in their respective conferences. And by one-ish pick, it could be adding a franchise-changing individual player in the first round, or simply just kind of nailing their draft picks. I always think about like transformative draft classes. 2017 Saints, right? That's always an easy example.
Yeah, that's the one, right?
That's one, right? That propped open and really extended. Like, I would say that, Frank, that's like a sliding doors moment, that if the Saints don't have that 2017 draft, we're not all sitting around here, you know, weeping and gnashing our teeth and like wagging our fingers at their cap situation every offseason. Cause I think it was that draft that really convinced the Saints, like, oh yeah, we can keep kicking the can down the road. We can keep contending. So it could be one of those types of drafts, right? Like, those are the teams we're looking at. So we're not looking at, you know, the teams that were in the NFC Championship game or really like big time contenders last year: Ravens, Bills, Chiefs, Commanders, Eagles. We're looking at teams that are maybe could have been playoff contenders, but are more like on the fringes of that discussion, if that makes sense.
Sure. But I mean, it goes the other way with contenders too. Look at the Eagles. Like, without that draft they had last year, they probably don't beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So this does apply to everybody. And that's why I believe, I've always said this, Matt, that the biggest sport in America is NFL. Obviously, we both agree on that. I believe if you could somehow separate it, the NFL draft would be the second biggest sport in America.
So,
and then it would be the NBA and MLB, all these sports you don't know about.
Yeah,
that
true.
The NFL draft is so huge because of this, because of what we're talking about, that every team to certain levels, I don't think Giants fans are like, wow, we're one draft away from being in a Super Bowl. But Giants fans are like, we're one draft away from having hope. We're one draft away from, oh, maybe in 2027 we can be contenders. That's what the NFL draft does. It offers hope to everybody that if you just nail it like the Saints that one year with Kamara and Ramchick and all them, you could make your life so much easier. You could improve your lot in life so much more. The Commanders last year or whatever. So it's sometimes just one pick, sometimes it's a class. But yes, every team goes into the draft with that dream of, hey, we're one pick or one draft away from really, really elevating ourselves.
Now, it's a great point about the Eagles, right? Obviously, it's easy to pay attention to Saquon Barkley in the free agency addition. But yeah, like that secondary needed to be complete. They went from probably the oldest and slowest secondary in the league in 2023. And you came on this show in last offseason. You said, I could see Nick Sirianni either being like winning the Super Bowl or being fired by Thanksgiving. And that was because like, how was this?
And it both happened in the same season, Matt, because we're sitting here in September. Like, go back and Google it because I have many times. All of the, hey, Nick Sirianni might get fired at the end of September. That was a thing.
Yeah.
Like that, when he was yelling at the Browns fans at the game that they won really, really ugly game in early October, everybody was on the train of, well, Nick is done. And then he ends up winning a Super Bowl. So yes, absolutely. And you know, the funny thing real quick, because I always like bringing this up. The Eagles, like everybody talks about what a great draft they had. Saquon Barkley, they're great free agent class. Their biggest acquisition of the entire offseason was Bryce Huff, who was a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl. So you're never going to get it perfect, but you just got to get it well enough to kind of, you know, fill the holes you need to fill.
Well, and I think when the tide started turning from going to be fired by Thanksgiving to we're going to win the damn Super Bowl was right after that early bye week when Cooper DeJean started playing more, you know, when that when this draft that they just had really started to make itself known. So let's get into some teams that are hoping to do something that's even close, even in the neighborhood of what the Eagles did last year in the draft. Let's start with the Cincinnati Bengals, who I think are an easy team for this exercise, Frank, because we think they're pretty well set up on one side of the ball, although I'm not totally convinced that they're just going to go defense in the first round, depending on who's there. I think offensive line is still in need, but primarily this is a team that needs just defense at every level, right? They could use help pretty much any defensive position they could take in the first round. I think we'd all be like, yep, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So Cincinnati Bengals, where do they stand? Where are they looking at in the draft?
Yeah, and even like, I mean, you think about the Trey Hendrickson situation. We don't know how that's going to settle. Like, he hasn't moved anywhere yet, but we still got some time before the draft. All of a sudden, that would open up another hole if they trade him. So yes, it is. This has been spoken a million times, but it's heinous to get an MVP type of season out of your quarterback and not even make the playoffs, which the Bengals somehow pulled off last year. Interesting that you think that they could go offensive line in the first round. I had briefly thought about that, that they're always kind of in the market for an offensive line, offensive lineman in the first round. Maybe they go that direction. But look, way back in the day when I was covering the Packers, way, way back in the day, I don't want to date myself, but sure. You know I'm old.
Yeah.
The Green Bay Packers were sick of getting torched by Randy Moss and Chris Carter. So in a draft, Ron Wolf, the Hall of Fame general manager, went cornerback, cornerback, cornerback with his first three picks. It was just I'm sick of this. I'm fixing the situation somehow. They kind of did, I guess. Not really, but it's not a great example, but it is the example I think of when I'm like, you have one weakness, just use an entire draft class on it. And I see that with the Bengals in defense. If they went defense with every single pick in this draft, I wouldn't fault them at all. Like, yes, they do have other needs, but I think, look, receiver obviously set. We saw Chase Brown. Okay, running back is good. We don't need to, even in this deep running back class, you really don't need to mess with that. Burrow, obviously, is great. The offensive line was obviously good enough to support the best passing attack in the NFL last year. So I just think that they just look at this draft as, we have to nail this. Mm-hmm. We have to get multiple picks right to fix our defense, because then we can compete all of a sudden. They're in a tough division, man. Like, this is, I agree fully with their decision to pay both receivers. That's what gives them the opportunity to be special, is having those two guys with Burrow. But it also limits you. You know, when you do that, it's a franchise decision to say, all right, well, then we need to draft perfectly on defense to get out of this mess. So I agree with you on the offensive line piece of it. If they don't go heavy defense in this draft, I'd be absolutely stunned.
Yeah, I'd be surprised too. Looking back on it, three of their first five picks were offensive players last year. They took Amarius Mims in the first round, tackle out of Georgia. They took Jermaine Burton in the third round, lit that pick on fire. Eric All, the tight end in the fourth round, who I believe tore his ACL again. He's out of Iowa, so Andy Behrens is obviously totally broken up about that. But I just wonder, Frank, like when we're thinking about positions for them to potentially target on defense, because I agree with you. I think the offense probably, again, maybe they add a guard if just that's the right pick there. But otherwise, like skill position players, we generally know who's going to be getting the ball. Although I think they could add like a day three running back, and that's not going to really factor into fantasy too much. Sure. But I just wonder how committed they are to some of these younger guys that they've drafted recently that really haven't broken out yet. Chris Jenkins and McKinley Jackson were defensive tackles that they took in the second and third round respectively last year. You know, I'm thinking about like Miles Murphy was a first rounder in 2023, hadn't really done too much. DJ Turner, second round DB a couple years ago. Daxton Hill has kind of been, you know, a hit or miss. So I just wonder, like, new system, new coaching under Al Golden coming from Notre Dame in the college ranks. I wonder how just, like, committed they are to these players, because I think that could help us kind of pinpoint who they're looking at in round one and beyond.
Yeah, and I honestly don't think they're committed to any of them. I mean, what have they done? Like, if they come through, if there's some development there, that'd be great, especially, like you said, new defensive coordinator might help any of these guys, a scheme change. But I think anything's on the table for them. And, you know, in this exercise, we're thinking about draft fits and what happens in the first round. And a couple of guys who came to mind for me are do-everything type of guys. Jalen Walker, who could be kind of a do-everything guy, especially you help your pass rush. Jihan Campbell, who's one of these linebackers who, look, off-ball linebacker isn't highly valued in the NFL anymore, but he's the type of guy, three down, he adds you some pass rush juice. I think he could be on the table for them because I would just want somebody who could do a little bit of everything, right? Like, you need so much that you kind of need a chess piece that you could say, all right, he could... Jihan Campbell is our great off-ball linebacker for the first two downs, and now we're going to deploy him as a blitzer or even, you know, a little bit of pass rush creativity there. So those are the type of guys I think they're looking at. But I think anything's on the table, Matt. I think if they really like a quarterback that's sitting there at 17, you take him. If you like safety, you could be justified with that linebacker, defensive tackle. Any position would be fine for the Cincinnati Bengals as long as it's on the defensive side of the ball, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jihan Campbell is my favorite non-wide receiver prospect in this class. I just love him. I think he's obviously, and we'll talk about the Bucks in the second segment. He's an ideal fit for them just because it's like, hey, you need like a, there's a lot of reasons and we'll get into it there, but he's just the type of guy that I think he could be a linebacker. You stick in the middle of your defense and is instantly like a force multiplier. He makes everybody better. He becomes like the identity of your defense. The Bengals, two picks before the Bucks, absolutely need that kind of identity. It just is a question of, is he going to be a guy that falls to a team like the Eagles at the end of the first round, just because he's got this shoulder.
Oh, goodness, could you imagine?
Number one, yes, I can. To answer the question, yes, I can imagine. I can imagine sitting there on Thursday night and be like, the Eagles did it again. Jihan Campbell, shoulder situation. And, you know, especially a team like Cincinnati probably needs guys to start right away. But I do think they're just going to hit basically all these positions. And it just is, how much can Al Golden, who is replacing Lou Anarumo, and I think, I don't know if you disagree with me, but I think Anarumo's a good coach and he's a good coordinator. But I think he relied
heavily. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, he relied
all of a sudden,
heavily.
Like, what happened? Like, Lou Anarumo went from being like everybody's favorite defense coordinator 3 years ago to like, okay, we got to fire this guy because he had the defense that screwed up an MVP season by Joe Burrow.
My theory on that is just that he worked really well with these like smart veteran kind of bargain bin guys that they added in free agency. And as those players, and you know, even guys like obviously Jesse Bates, as that talent started to erode and they had to start relying on younger players, more inexperienced guys, I think he just wasn't able to sort of bridge that gap. And that's why I think they go to a guy like Al Golden from the college ranks, who theoretically, and again, this is all in theory, can help teach some of these younger guys that are going to have to play. Because if you're paying those guys on offense, you're going to have to play a lot of young guys. So I think we can agree that this is going to be, even if they do go guard in the first round or something like that, which is going to be hilarious, people will react to that pretty heavily. People are going to lose their minds. This is going to be a defensive heavy draft, and whoever they take is going to have to contribute. I don't think they are one-ish right pick away. I think they have to nail a couple here. And
there's got to be a starter come out of the fourth round where you're like, wow, they nailed that cornerback pick in the fourth round. Like, that's the type of drafting.
And they need a couple of these young guys that we talked about who haven't done anything to maybe show something as well. Let's stick in the AFC. Let's go to our next team here, the Los Angeles Chargers. They're another team that I think... how do you feel about the Chargers offseason overall? Because I think some have been kind of caught off guard that it was a rather quiet, like, free agency period for a team that you would think, hey, they have a lot of cap room. They made a surprising run last year to the playoffs when people didn't expect it. And they have a, you know, top 10 fringe top five quarterback. Like, why not go all in? That has certainly not been the way the Chargers have acted this offseason.
No, and even losing guys like Puna Ford, who, you know, he's not selling a lot of jerseys, but he's a guy who could really help you in the middle of the defense. I was surprised. I thought the Chargers were going to be more active because last season was their, okay, we got to get the cap right. We got to trade Keenan Allen. We got to cut Mike Williams. They can't re-sign Austin Eckler. But next year, we're going to have the cap space back. Like, we kind of reset ourselves and get some Harbaugh's guys in here. It really didn't happen. I was surprised. I can't sit here and say that I expected the Chargers to be this kind of passive in free agency. But, you know, I think that they're kind of sending the message that we're going to do this through the draft. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be big splashy players in free agency. And, or they just didn't like a lot of the prices that were out there on the free agents, because look, free agency was terrible this year. It really was. If you were looking for guys, you had to pay way more than you should, quote unquote, because values, whatever, somebody's willing to pay you. But I think that we saw a lot of inflated prices because there were so few free agents, good free agents, impact free agents hit the market.
Right. I mean, they make some value additions like on offense. They add Mike Williams to, you know, be kind of just a body at X receiver if they need it.
I didn't like that at all. Did you? Like, no. I was like,
I mean,
like,
I liked it in the sense that I think at this point he's not a needle mover. So we're not taking targets from Ladd McConkey as like a, as just a pure Ladd McConkey fantasy bro. I did like the addition. But yeah, I don't think he, again, I don't think he moves the needle for them. I think they will still be looking at wide receiver in the draft. Maybe not in the first round, but second round, third round, I think we could see them make an addition there. At running back, I also liked the Najee Harris signing because I think he's a better system fit for them than he was with Arthur Smith last year. But I also think that doesn't preclude them from going running back even in the first round in the NFL draft. So I agree with you, Frank, that I think that the Chargers look like a team that's going to be very, and this isn't shocking considering where the GM comes from and obviously you know who Jim Harbaugh is, but I think they're going to be very Ravens-ish about this thing. They're going to try to make some value picks and get young guys who can contribute early in their NFL career. So when we're thinking about what the Chargers can do in the draft, what positions do you have your eyes on?
I mean, maybe I'm just being too, you know, trying to make a fun pick here, but I do think running back is on the table. And
sure,
Omarion Hampton, what if he slips there? What a perfect fit that would be. Because like you said, Najee Harris is fine. Like, he's the kind of guy you get so you're like, okay, we're not desperate at running back in the draft. If we don't get a starter out of this draft, we're okay. If somebody falls to us we didn't expect, we can make that pick and not worry about running back. I don't think he adds a lot of juice to your offense. And this offense really needed a guy like that. Dobbins was very good at times last year. But I think somebody like Hampton, who incredibly productive, he checks all the boxes. He's just being overshadowed by Genty in this draft class. I think he would be such a fun fit, but this is also the Chargers we're talking about. What does Jim Harbaugh like? Jim Harbaugh really, really values offensive line. So I can see them being fully in on interior offensive line. We know how great their tackles are, but still, interior is just okay. They just might be like, whatever, we're trying to build the Dallas Cowboys 1994 offensive line here, and we're just going to keep putting first round picks into offensive line, and who cares who the running back is at that point. So I think interior defensive line is on the table for them. And like you kind of mentioned, receiver, like there's going to be some receivers in this part of the draft where you're like, okay, now we could take a shot on a Matthew Golden or either Luther Burden, somebody like that. I think the Chargers could go a lot of different directions here, including running back. That would be the fun pick. That would be the fun. Like, all of us would be geeked out. Mm-hmm. All of us fantasy bros would be geeked out if Hampton landed with the Chargers. He would move from, you know, I think he's going, what, about fourth round right now, and those best balls going on. He'd probably move up to like early third. Mm. Like, we would be very excited about Omarion Hampton in this offense.
Yeah, and obviously he'd have to split work with Najee Harris. But I think that's fine. Like,
I don't know if he would, Matt.
Really?
I don't know if he would.
Okay.
I mean, at some point, I think Jim Harbaugh would play the best guy. And Najee is, again, he's fine. But I view him more as he'd be a great number two.
Sure.
Like, he'd be a fantastic number two. If you needed to go to him for 10 carries a game or somebody got hurt for a couple of weeks, he'd be great. But I don't think that if you use the 20, I think 22nd is right there. If you use the 22nd pick on a running back talent like that, I don't think you keep him in the garage very long. I think Jim Harbaugh would be like, wheels up, let's go.
Yeah, I think you might, if you took Hampton in your fantasy draft for this year, I think you might have to put up with like some veteran deference in September. But by the end of the season, I think Hampton would be the guy there. And yeah, they were not a good rushing team last year, despite the fact that they wanted to be a good rushing team last year. They were 27th in rushing success rate. And I think Harris is going to give them like some more down-to-down consistency, but he's not going to give them any big play juice like you mentioned. And they got some of that from J.K. Dobbins last year. Hampton could be even better, and I love him in like a gap-style system like what the Chargers run. You know, do some pulling stuff, like define the lanes for him, and he can just absolutely explode through holes. So I'm a big Hampton fan. I think this would be a great fit for him. I also think, like, to bring up the interior offensive line, you know, again, we're thinking about a power gaps type of system here. Tyler Booker out of Alabama, who's not going to be a fit for everybody because he's not a good athlete. He's not going to be a fit in one of these teams that even wants to major in zone and minor in some gap stuff. The Chargers are the other way around, so I could see him being a fit there. But also, what about wide receiver? Do you think there's any chance they could go round one wide receiver here?
Yeah, I think if they like somebody, I mean, because it just was so thin behind McConkey last year. And Mike Williams solves nothing. So you look at kind of, you know, when I go through the mock drafts of Charles McDonald and Nate Tice, who've done like 1,700 mock drafts.
An absurd amount.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And it's I read all of them. You look at some of the receivers who are in that pocket where you're like, okay, I could see it because you're going to need something. I will say this about the Chargers. And you try to think about how these teams, you know, think about the draft and all that. Last year, everybody was saying Malik Nabers. They draft Joe Alt.
Yeah.
And because I think that they viewed it as receivers deep enough, we're going to get somebody good in the second round. And they did. They got Ladd McCaukey in the second round. Ended up being great for them, right? I wonder if they look at running back the same way this year. Mm-hmm. We've talked a million. That's why you and Charles are doing two shows on running backs this year. Yeah. There are so many guys in this draft who could become rookie starters in the NFL that I do wonder at the Chargers, who I think are probably going to end up being one of those smart NFL teams with Jim Harbaugh kind of running the show. You know, I think that they could view it as, well, the value at running back is actually in the third round, fourth round. We can get a starter. We don't need to get Hampton in the first. We can get a good running back in the third while we draft offensive line in the first.
It trenches, man. Interior defensive line also a need too. So I could definitely see
I could see
them going trenches in round one or round two. Cause I think there's going to be some guys on the second day of the draft, even at receiver. Like, yeah, running back, obviously it's a deep class, but I kind of like the group of second, third round wideouts. And especially for guys that they need, like, you know, they need somebody I think that's more of a perimeter presence and can kind of rotate maybe slot flanker with Ladd McConkey if it's that type of player. So I think you could get some of those guys on the second day. You don't have to do that in round one, but I could certainly see the Chargers being one of these teams. If they crush the draft, and after what they did last year, I have a lot of faith that they can crush the draft. They could have one of these like franchise changing NFL drafts. Again, if they obviously get the picks right, pretty stupid analysis there. Let's move to the Texans. this is, I mean, team needs need an offensive line.
Oh my God. Yeah. An entire offensive line. Like what, again, talking about like throwing a million draft picks at a position. If the Texans just went O-line, I'd be like, okay, yeah. I get it. Like, I don't know what they're doing at O-line. And everybody's like, oh, Laramie Tunsil's really not that great. Okay. He's still an adult in a room.
Right.
Like, I don't know what they're doing on the offensive line. And we saw, look, I am as big of a C.J. Stroud fan as anybody. He had, to me, the greatest rookie season until Jaden Daniels came around, whatever. And then second year, he kind of fell apart. Like, he was not the same guy. But I say, well, what did they do to protect him? This offensive line was terrible. And then they kind of dismantled the offensive line. On one hand, you're dismantling a bad offensive line.
Sure.
On the other hand, you didn't do anything to replace those guys. So what are we doing here? Like, I worry about C.J. Stroud. Again, fantasy, because I play fantasy. I love fantasy.
Of course.
I'm thinking about C.J. Stroud in fantasy. Like last year, he was kind of one of those like QB7, QB8 type of guys, right? I don't know that I would draft him as a QB1 right now because the offensive line's so bad. Like, how could you trust it? How could you trust C.J. Stroud to have a big season when I don't think they could protect him. I think this is one of the five worst offensive lines in football right now. And I just don't, that's just a disaster recipe for any quarterback. When you have an offensive line that bad, as we saw C.J. Stroud struggle behind a bad line last year, what did the Texans do to improve it? Now, look, again, this is what we're talking about in the show. Have a transformative draft on the offensive line. You get 2-3 starters out of it. Great. You've turned things around. You fixed it. But they got to do it. Mm-hmm. Like it's not as easy as it sounds.
No, right. I come back to like the Chiefs when they drafted Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Like that's the type of offensive line draft that the damn Texans need. Like they need to hit a home run in the first, like day one, day two, and then they need one of those like day three sleepers to emerge for them, which is totally possible. And I think they are counting on coaching and communication to be an upgrade for this offensive line, even if from a talent perspective, it wasn't good last year, but they obviously got worse in the offseason. You know, you pluck starters from the Vikings and Seahawks offensive lines, like two teams that were desperately need. They might have been the other worst offensive lines in the league. Seattle can compete for that, but
yeah, and you look at some of the grades. I had a Pro Football Focus grades or everything, but you're like, really? Like,
yeah.
That's your solution? He was seventh worst guard in the NFL last year. You know,
exactly.
I don't know that free agency really fixed these needs for them.
I do think a draft can really turn the tide here, not just from an offensive line perspective, but I think they also need more in the receiver room, because part of what the calculus with C.J. Stroud last year is, well, yeah, in fantasy, he's not a mobile quarterback, but with those three wideouts, he could maybe throw like 50 touchdowns, and that's why you'd still take him as a top 10 quarterback. Well, he obviously did not get close to that, and that wide receiver room was more of a theory than an actual idea, because Steph Diggs tears his ACL after 8 weeks. Tank Dell really was never right, and he's probably not going to be part of the proceedings this year, and Nico Collins was also on and off the field. So they add Christian Kirk.
I mean, can you imagine, though? Like, let's say they just stick with what they got. Hey, Christian Kirk, okay. They just stay. Like, you know, Blackjack, we stay. This is a receiver room going into the season. Nico Collins, let's say Nico gets 17 games this year, 200 targets, right?
Yeah.
Like, easy?
Yeah.
Like, who else are they throwing to? Like, that's got to be their offense. Like, it's got to be Nico, get open. Like, we got nothing else here.
And unlike typically when we do that, like, oh, who else are they going to throw the ball to? Like, it's got to be that guy. Nico Collins is good enough to earn the type of treatment, you know? Yeah. So I agree. Absolutely. Like, he's a slam dunk, like, first round fantasy pick to me is Nico Collins. And I don't even think adding a rookie in the draft would really change that. Maybe if it's a first rounder like Emeka Egbuka, who would be just such a layup provider for CJ Stroud. And obviously they have history together from Ohio State.
I'll say this, Matt, if they do go with somebody like that, if somebody like him falls, I get it. At least I'd still be like, what are you guys doing on the offensive line?
What's the plan?
But I would say, all right, well, you needed it. So figure out offensive line in the second through fourth rounds. But so if it's receiver in the first round, I get it. Anything else, I know they have interior defensive line issues. I know that they could use other guys at linebacker, quarterback opposite Stingley, whatever. But I think it's got to be, if it's not offensive line, it should be receiver.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you there. They have two picks in the third round, too. So they don't have a fourth, but they have two picks in the third round. So they can definitely, again, if the right guy's not there and available at offensive line in the first round, they could maybe double dip in round two and round three. And yeah, defensively, like, you have D'Amico Ryans, you have Derek Stingley, who you just invested in. I think Kamari Lassiter gave him some good play, especially down the stretch of the other cornerback spot. Yeah. They add CJ Gardner-Johnson. You should leave that defense alone, basically, and just say, like, okay, D'Amico Ryans, have fun doing that. We're going to try to really hammer offensive talent in the draft, because I think that side of the ball really needs an infusion and could use the like franchise-changing draft type of thing that we're talking about here. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll run through some NFC teams right after this. All right, we're back. Frank, let's move into the NFC, and let's talk Green Bay Packers here. Team needs for them is interesting. It's kind of just, I think they're like, on paper needs are kind of obvious from like a defensive perspective. I think we could talk about that, but I just feel like they kind of need blue chip players, right? On both sides of the ball. The problem is this is not a draft full of obvious blue chip players, at least available in the first round.
Nor are they picking at a spot where you're getting obvious blue chip players.
Right.
This is this is why I love coming on a fantasy show, because I can make fantasy references. If you are in a draft cap, a salary cap league, the team that drafts like all of the like $15 players, it probably is going to stink. You're like, wow, we got so much depth. But yeah, you don't have a Jamar Chase, right? Like, you don't have a difference maker. You just have a lot of good players. That's a Green Bay Packers to me right now. They don't have a weakness. Because we're doing this exercise. We're figuring it out, pre-production. All right, Packers, what are their team needs? I sat here and thought, they don't have one. There's not one thing where I'm like, the Packers are so utterly deficient that I'm like, that's a problem for them. They're kind of good everywhere. Yes, the Jair Alexander situation means they probably need a corner, and their defensive line needs work, and you can always use offensive line and all that. But I look at this Packers team, I say they don't have really a weakness, but who's their blue chip guy?
Yeah.
Who's their alpha? Like, even a quarterback, I'm not sure they got that alpha. I don't think Jordan Love's good, but I don't know that he's going to be an MVP anytime in his career either. And so I'm like, who's their real difference maker? That's kind of their receiver room too, that, you know, we talked about last year going in. We're like, wow, they got Reed, they got this and they got that. And it's like, yeah, they got a lot of good players, but not one great one. And I think that's kind of them across the board on the roster. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, but I don't know it gives you a high ceiling either.
Right. Like, Josh Jacobs is, I think, probably their best player on paper. And typically,
I think,
and he was a great addition for them last year, and was huge in the run game. But it's sort of with the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, yeah, Saquon Barkley might be their best player, but also it's like, you could talk about AJ Brown. You could talk about Devontae Smith. Brown, you could talk about obviously quarterback.
Talk about Lane Johnson.
Yeah, you can talk about Lane Johnson, Jalen Carter. You know, you can go down down the list and just name all these like impact, I would say, potential top 10 easy players at their position.
Difference makers.
I think the Packers,
and I don't know that the Packers have a difference maker.
Correct.
I really don't. Like, they have a lot of good players, But I mean, even like Kraft, like, okay, yeah, he's a fine tight end. He's pretty good, but he ain't that guy. Like, he ain't George Kittle. Like, right. You know, I mean, so I don't know. Like, I just look at this Packers team and I just think that they need one guy. And McKinney probably is their best player, I guess, at safety, but that's not really historically a difference making position. I don't know. But like you said, A, this draft doesn't offer many blue chip guys that we know of yet. Like, well, guys will emerge, all that. But Packers aren't really drafting in a spot where you're like, yes, we're going to get a big difference maker. They're down there and they're going to be down there for a while because they're a very good football team. But I think they need a difference maker. And I don't know how they do that in this draft. I don't know how they fix that problem. So I think it's just another draft where they're kind of drafting good football players. And that's great. There's obviously nothing wrong with that. But I don't know if it gets them to where they need to go, especially in that division, which is so loaded.
Yeah, maybe if one of these first round corners or first round edge rushers they bring into the building and then that player really exceeds expectations and becomes a blue chip, I think that would probably, you know, he's not ranked. Like, this happens all the time, obviously. The draft is so fun. And you mentioned it might be the second most popular sport in America. Because nobody really knows anything, you know, it's so unpredictable, yeah, right, both going in and then coming out. It's like, oh, well, they took my fifth ranked whatever in the when this guy was still, nobody knows anything. And it's all really about like landing spot and coaching and things of that nature, things that just you can't know going into it. So I think that they need that, though. They need one of these guys to like exceed expectations. And really, honestly, Frank, they just need the guys on the roster to improve. They need to see some of those guys take a level jump here. I think the draft class is actually less important than that, because you brought up Tucker Kraft, and I think he's probably the only pass catcher that they had last year that got better. All those guys, I think, are still good players. Like, Jaden Reed's a good player. Romeo Dobbs is a good player. Christian Watson's not going to be available this year, but like, he's a useful player. Dontavian Wicks, I think if he could catch the ball, he'd be a good player. He's a good wide receiver, but he doesn't receive good. So like, what's the deal there? But some of those are correctable issues, but we'll see what happens. But again, if one of those guys just jumped a level instead of staying where they're at, then I think we'd be talking about something different. You're right. That is just kind of like the symptom, the diagnosis of the entire Packers roster. Let's go to a team that does draft extremely well, which is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think Jason Light and the boys there in the front office are probably one of the most underrated front offices in the NFL. This is such a good drafting team, and I think this is another group that's similar to the Bengals. If they used every single pick on defense this year, maybe even more so than the Bengals, I think if they used every single pick on defense in the draft this year, nobody would bat an eye.
The Buccaneers are one of those teams I keep looking at like, is this team really, really good? I mean, you start thinking about what they have. Because I thought they were going to let Godwin go because McMillan was so good down the stretch last year. And then they're just like, nah, we're going to bring Chris Godwin back. And you're like, wow, that's a good receiver room. I really like Bucky Irving. Like, he was, everybody does. Like, I'm not, there's no epiphany there.
Did they, Frank, did they have the draft that we're talking about last year? Like, did they have that sort of transformative draft? Right. Because Graham Barton was such a multiplier on the offensive line as the center. McMillan's good. Irving's good. Like, you know, they kind of might have had this draft last year.
They really might have. We might look back at that draft as being a difference maker. And I just think about, you know, the Buccaneers, what they need, though. I mean, Todd Bowles came out and said, it's no shock. We need corners. We need cornerbacks. And so I think they hit a cornerback really, really hard in this draft. And that could, if they hit on a couple, all of a sudden, if their defense can keep up, it's not like that division's too good. Like, the Buccaneers should win that division. Sorry, Atlanta fans, unless Michael Penix is just that dude. The Buccaneers should be easily the favorite in that division. And they might be a little bit more than that. I just keep looking at this team like, this team is stacked. This team is really, really good. The potential to be a contender is there, but they have to hit this draft hard. They can't come in kind of with the same defense they had last year, which wasn't quite championship level. They do need edge rushers too. I think they could take a shot at like a Mike Green out of Marshall. Just swing big. Like, we all know Mike Green has his issues. He led college football sacks last year, but there are reasons he's dropping in the draft. But he's the kind of guy who could hit big. Like, he could also be a Jermaine Burton. We don't know. He could be just a wasted draft pick because of all the reasons he's slipping in the draft. But if he hits, he might hit big. And you match him with Diaby, who, if he takes a step like he thinks he's going to take, all of a sudden your defensive line is set. If you could fix your cornerback situation, that would be great. Because I think the offense is there. Like, we do underrate the loss of coordinators. I say this all the time.
Absolutely.
Losing Liam Cohen is no joke. Like, he got a head coaching job for a reason, right? But I just trust that their offensive infrastructure line's pretty good. Everything's good on their offense. If they could fix the defense and bring it up just one level to, it's not a terrible defense. If you could just bring it up one level, off-ball linebacker would help them too. I think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would run away with the NFC South at that point. And then all of a sudden we'd be talking about them like, hey, could they compete maybe with the Eagles? You know, might we find the Buccaneers in an NFC championship game? I do think they have that ceiling.
I absolutely agree with you because I think this is one of the better offenses in the league from a construction standpoint. Now, I'm with you on the Liam Cohen stuff. There's almost no chance that they do what they did last year, which is wave goodbye to a good offensive coordinator to a head coaching job and then upgrade that guy. Like, because Liam Cohen was an upgrade on Dave Canales. It's probably not going to happen with Josh. Is it Grizzard or Grizzard? Because I've heard it said both ways. So
I'm the world's worst person at pronouncing names. Okay. So don't ask me.
All right.
Please don't ask
me. We'll figure that out by week one. So we'll figure it out by training camp. I don't want to be disrespectful. We'll figure it out by training camp. We're all getting reps in here. But I think that offense is probably going to be just like out of the box, ready to go. I wonder about guys like Chris Braswell, Tyke Smith, who they drafted last year. Again, like, let's make this 2024 class as if it doesn't need to be any better. Like, let's get more out of those guys, maybe. Right. But let's hit again cornerback, edge across from Hassan Reddick. I like that Reddick addition, but you need more there. And really, off ball linebacker, Jihad Campbell's just such an easy player to see in this Buccaneers defense because
he'd be a great.
He's a good blitzer. He's a tone setter, and they just kind of need a face on that side of the ball. You know, Lavonte David is still there, somehow still there and still playing quality ball.
Still balling too.
Right. Like, but he's a year-to-year guy at this point.
He's Bobby Wagner, right?
Yeah, they need a torch. They need somebody to pass torch to. Campbell would be an ideal fit there. But again, comes back to the shoulder.
Great pick for them. And there's where they're drafting, there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks there too that are good enough to come in and start day one. So they're going to, but I do agree with you. I think Campbell would be a tone setter for them.
Let's talk about the LA Rams, who again, much like the Bucks, might have had this draft last year in terms of like a transfer, a full transfer. They've been doing it actually for a minute now, right? Because obviously they had the 2023 draft where they get Steve Avila, who's a good quality offensive lineman. They got some guy named Puka Nacua in the fifth round. You might have heard of that. Did burn a pick on Stetson Bennett.
By the way, real quick, Matt, you saw what McVay said about Nacua? McVay basically comes out and says, "I'm sorry, guys, I haven't used Puka Nacua enough." I'm like, what?
Really?
Wait, what? I did not see that. Go look it up. He said it yesterday. I saw the headline. I didn't read the story, unfortunately. I'm one of those people now. But yeah, McVay basically came out and said, trust me, we're going to use Puka Nacua more. I'm like, wow. Oh, okay. That's something to remember, because if that's true, if he actually believes that, okay. I don't even know what to say about that, because I didn't think they could possibly use Puka Nacua any more than they did.
I mean, yeah, I saw that he wanted to get some more usage out of Tutu Atwell. I did not see the Puka Nacua thing. Puka Nacua led all wide receivers and targets per route run by a lot. So, and he also gets like rush attempts every game. So shoot, I mean, any more usage, he might be which is probably like, this is this classic coach stuff. Like, yeah, I gotta use Puka Nacua more. I gotta use Tutu Atwell.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah, I gotta use Tutu Atwell more. Oh, by the way, he signed Devontae Adams, you know, who's definitely gonna command his fair share of targets. So again, the Rams are coming off a couple of good drafts here. Last year, they double up on the FSU guys. They go Jared Verse in round one. They trade up in the second round for Braden Fisk. So, Blake Corum, whatever. They didn't get much out of him. But they also got Bo Limmer in the sixth round, and he was a good starter enough for them to move on from Jonah Jackson on the offensive line. So they're coming off a couple of good drafts here, Frank. What do we think they need this year?
It's amazing what happens when you have draft picks, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't trade them all away. Let me ask, because I think this is related to what we're talking about. What do you think of the 49ers, just in general, as a football team?
I considered having them on this episode, but I thought they made much more sense for the, spoiler alert, next teams that shape the draft episode, which is teams we can't quite figure out, which is weird that the 49ers are on that list with teams like the damn Jets and Saints, by the way. So again, we'll get to that episode next week. But yeah, man, the 49ers, my first instinct when people started putting the social media graphics together, look at all these guys that the 49ers have lost this offseason. And it's like Aaron Banks and Debo Samuel and, you know, Kyle Juszczyk at the time, obviously he's back. My first instinct was, this is exactly what people did with the Bills last year. Like, look at all these names that they lost, and none of them were truly, truly impact players for the 2024 San Francisco 49ers. That said, it's obvious that they're in a transition phase, right? So again, this is why they make so much sense for the episode next week, is I can't quite figure out what they are going to do or where they see themselves right now, Frank. I just know that they need help on the trenches. Like, and I don't think they can go into the season right now with the offense and defensive line that they currently have constructed and expect to compete with a team like the Rams, who is so well set up on both of those areas.
Yeah. And the reason I brought that up is because when you look at the betting odds over at BetMGM, the 49ers are favored to win the NFC West, and I completely disagree with that. Yeah, I think the Rams, yes, they are, right? That's the exact same reaction I had when I saw it. And, you know, I dabble. Maybe I might have taken a Rams to win the NFC West, because I think that that's the best team in this division. They took such a leap last year. Like you said, the draft class they had kind of fixed their defense. We're like, oh my God, this defense is going to be terrible without Aaron Donald. No, it was really good by the end of the year. Like, they almost beat the Eagles. Let's not forget that. And I don't see there being adding Davante Adams, who isn't prime Davante Adams anymore, obviously, but he sure helps.
Yeah,
like, he's going to be good. He's an upgrade over what they had with Cooper Kupp, 2024 Cooper Kupp. I love Cooper Kupp, love his career, but we all kind of know where Cooper Kupp is right now. Davante Adams is an upgrade there. Their defense probably going to get better, like young defense. So I view the Rams as that's the best team in the NFC West. And if they have another one of those drafts where you could fix the cornerback situation, because I think that's their biggest problem. If you can fix a cornerback situation, the Rams go from we're the best team in the NFC West to maybe we're the best team in the NFC. I really think that with that coach, as long as Stafford doesn't hit a wall, he was very inconsistent last year.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
As long as like Stafford still has another year left in him like that, like he was playing in that Eagles game, why not? Why aren't the Rams one of the 2-3 best teams in the NFC right now?
This is not good podcast content. It'd be better if we disagreed, but I completely agree with basically everything you just said. You ever see the Christmas movie, Christmas with the Cranks? You ever see that one with Tim Allen?
I have not. Oh. Wow. I know of it. Sure.
I mean, by the way, like that's the first time, you know, either you or Scott have been on the pod and I've seen a movie and you haven't. So.
I was just going to say,
but there's a line in that movie that I repeat all the time. And like, to the point that I would say it all the time when my wife and I started dating, and she's like, she thought it was so funny. And I have a lot of these, by the way. And then she saw the movie and she's like, oh, this is where you got that. Like, I'm no longer impressed with how funny you are. But this is embarrassing. What's the actress's name? Who's in that movie? Jamie Lee Curtis. That was embarrassing that I forgot that. Jamie Lee Curtis. She gives the whole, like, this long heartfelt speech at Christmas, and then Tim Allen comes up and she says say a few words. He goes, same goes for me double. Like, that's what I want to say to what you just said. Same goes for me double. Everything Frank just put out there, I completely co-sign, because I think this Rams team is so well set up. They have 2 third rounders. They don't have a second round because they traded it to the Panthers to trade up for Braden Fisk last year, and I think they don't regret that.
Nope.
2 third rounders, a fourth rounder, obviously their first rounder. You hit like two of those picks that need areas in the secondary. I think they absolutely could use some help.
Corner. They were patching that. That was scotch tape last year that they were trying to, and they did a pretty good job with it. Like, they ended up getting some decent play at cornerback somehow, some way, but they need to upgrade. If they upgrade corner, look out. The Rams could be really good.
Yeah. But other than that, like, where's the screaming need area?
There's really not. Like, you could look, they just don't value off ball linebackers, so I'm not even gonna say that. Defensive line is kind of set. You could always use another one.
Sure.
Offensive line, you could always use another one, but their offensive line ain't bad. Getting Alaric Jackson back was one of the kind of under the radar big moves of free agency, because I didn't think there was a chance the Rams were going to be able to get him back, but they did, and I thought that was a huge move for them. So yeah, there's no part of this Rams team where I'm like, yeah, they're really in trouble there, except corner. Corner's the one thing where I'm like, it's not good enough. And they could just attack it now, and I think they will.
Even on offense, I know that McVay is saying, hey, we could use Tutu Atwell more, and they paid him $10 million. I even think like the right speed receiver falls to them in the third round, not in the first round. I don't think they'll do it.
Yeah.
But like in the third round, something like that, I could see them adding another receiver to this room just to give them like a complementary skill set, and I think be more of a threatening actual receiver, not like a, like Tutu Atwell is a nice tactical idea because he's fast and he opens up space. By the way, did you know that Tutu Atwell gained 10 pounds? I was talking about this with James Coe yesterday. Apparently now he's up to 165. Remember, he was like 155 coming into the draft. So Tutu putting on the weight there in L.A. I mean, I can relate.
I put on 10 pounds, too. I think I'm 165 or something. Yeah,
yeah, sure. I can relate. We go move out to L.A. It was like, oh, it's a health city. Nah, you're going to there's a lot of great places to eat. You can pack on 10 pounds in L.A. pretty easy. Don't worry about it. So shout out to Tutu Atwell for that. But he's more of like a tactical threat than he is an actual receiver. So I wouldn't rule like that out. Guy, yeah. Yeah. But again.
Right. Yeah. He's just he's got value in real life. But he is what he is.
I love the way the Rams are set up. As long as Stafford doesn't fall off, and I'm with you that it's a little bit on my radar that he was inconsistent, to put it nicely, at times last year.
There were some games. I mean, look at that Thursday night game against the 49ers. Yeah. I get it was in rain and all that, but there were some games for Matthew Stafford last year where you're like,
Dolphins game.
All right, the age. Where it was just like, it's getting pretty ugly, but we don't remember that because we have recency bias and he was so good against the Eagles.
Exactly. All right, let's take our final break. We come back, we'll wrap this up with a few teams that I may have overlooked, but Frank says, no, these might also be some teams to consider right after this. All right, we're back. Frank, I carefully crafted this list of teams, carefully. But
very carefully, yeah, I'm sure.
Really carefully. A lot of time. I mean, just hours of meditation here. On which teams need that? Which team could really use a 2017 Saints draft? 32 of 32. Other than the Eagles.
Everyone. Yeah. It's like when people were like, what team's a good fit for, like when the whole ridiculous Myles Garrett's trade stuff. Yeah. Like, what team's a good fit for Myles Garrett?
All of them.
Every single
one. 32, including the one that he's on right now, because like just open up the checkbook and that'll help all the problems.
Yeah.
Dude, even the damn Chiefs could use a 2017 Saints draft, because the 2017 Saints had Drew Brees. Like they had a great quarterback who was still hanging on to his kind of prime-ish years. Get some guys around him, and we can. They didn't win a Super Bowl. They could push for a Super Bowl. They can consistently continue to contend. Even the damn Chiefs could use that. But this carefully crafted list of not all 32 teams. You saw a couple here that you wanted to point out that might also be sort of on the fringes of this discussion.
I do, and look. We say a lot of things in April that look bad in July and August. Even I've changed my mind on stuff. So don't hold me to this, because usually it's May when I get into my team previews and I start writing them and researching them and really digging into these teams. So this is a little surface level, but I think.
But I will say sorry to interrupt you, Frank, but I'm going to do it to give you. I'm going to do it to give you props. Not this time last year, but May last year, you were one of the few people being like, "Hey, the Commanders, like
Commanders, yeah."
You were like, "Hey,
I didn't get everything right last year by any means, but I did nail the Commanders."
Who cares? You got that one right, so let's talk about it.
I did. It was profitable for me. Let's say. But my pet project of this offseason is really looking into the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I know everyone's like, "What, the Jaguars? They stink." Yeah, the Washington Commanders did too last year. Look, we have a coaching change here. And yeah, Liam Cohen at the awkward press conference, that's what everybody remembers. But Liam Cohen, great offensive mind. I mean, he had a great offensive season at least. And Trevor Lawrence, like the light is still on there. Like me and Fitz at the Sunday night shows, we spent a lot of time being like, Trevor Lawrence ain't that dude. Trevor Lawrence ain't that dude.
Sure.
But we all know the talent's there, right? There has been things within that Jaguars organization that have not allowed him to succeed. Maybe Liam Cohen fixes some of this stuff. And look, there's some deficiencies on this Jaguars roster, but there were deficiencies on the Texans roster 2 years ago or the Commanders roster last year. I don't know that it's so much that they can't overcome it. Brian Thomas was one of the Grand Slam picks the last 5 to 10 NFL drafts. Like, that dude can just a baller, a certified baller. We all know that. Even the running back situation, I don't think is that bad. But you go into this draft and you say, like, they got the 5th pick of the draft. They're going to get a difference maker there. If you could put a Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan, if you could put him in the middle of their defense and he's just wrecking shop in the middle, I think that's one of the best fits that could actually reasonably happen in the draft, because that's the type of dude they need. We talk about difference makers, setting the tone. Mason Graham could be that dude for the Jaguars. And then after that, in the second round, they have a lot of needs on defense. I'm not trying to just overlook that, but I also do think coaching changes matter. Like that whole staff last year, Doug Peterson, I don't want to say he'd kind of checked out, but I think he was just resigned to the fact that he was going to get fired. And that was such a team that was just playing out the string last year. And I also think this about the Jaguars. That division is not too tough. It is. We all know the Colts issues. When you bring in Daniel Jones to compete with your starter's probably cooked. Like that just probably means like, we've given up. Like, Daniel Jones is going to come in and compete. Yeah. Oh, that is such a bad headline for your offseason.
It's over.
I don't like the Colts. And even the Texans, if that offensive line doesn't get fixed, look, they were not a very good team in the second half last year. I don't think the Texans are unbeatable by any means. So I can see the Jaguars kind of ascending a little bit. And again, the Jaguars have just been this whatever team for so long, but I still think that there's the seeds of talent there, but they need a great draft. They need to have the kind of draft where you're like, ooh, okay, now they fixed that need in the middle of their defense with Mason Graham. And in the second round, they got a guy I'm really interested in. And that third round, they got a running back. Ooh, all of a sudden, he fell too far because this running back class was so deep. And so I just think the Jaguars could be one of those teams that goes, I don't know if they finished last year. I can't remember. No, the Titans, obviously. But they could go from close to last to being a playoff team next year. I truly believe that. The Jaguars are the team that I'm most excited to kind of study in May and see, is there more under the hood here? Because surface level, I look at this team as one of those, like, nobody likes the Jaguars right now, but they could surprise everybody because the seeds are there.
I think I kind of want to tail you on this one too, because I'm such a big believer in Liam Cohen. Loved his offense last year, and right. Beyond that, like what he is as a play caller and a schematic guy and everything, yeah, everybody's going to meme to, and they have already meme to death the press conference and all that, but people have been talking about Liam Cohen glowingly as like a leader and a culture builder for a long time, and I think beyond that, like, he's going to do a lot. And so same with James Gladstone as a GM. Like, you mentioned Doug Peterson thing. I thought he was fired like three times last year. Number one, I thought he was fired going into the year. Like, I thought he was, to use absolutely the Kevin Clark term, I thought he was pre-fired going into the season. Then I thought he was fired after that London halftime interview when they were just getting the doors beat off of them by the damn Chicago Bears. And he looked like a man checked out, ready to get left in London after that game, although they had another game against the Patriots in London after that. And then remember, there were headlines like going to, I think, week 11 when they were facing the Lions with Mac Jones as the starting quarterback. And they're like, if they don't beat the Lions, one of the best teams in the NFL, they're going to fire Doug Peterson. They lost like 50 to...
It's just because Shad Khan doesn't even know he has a football team.
Yeah, they lost that's like the 50-something to 3, and guess what? He didn't get fired. So I thought he was fired like three times last year. I think he would probably imagine he was fired like multiple times last season. So I agree with you on the checkdown nature of it. The Jags also have 10 picks in the draft. They have two third rounders, they have two fourth rounders, they have two sixth rounders. So, and I really like
the type of, that's the type of, when you have those extra draft capital, that's the type of draft where you could say, oh, this running back, Caleb Johnson fell to us in the third round. Okay, why not? Like, that's the kind of pick you can make there and get a kind of a difference making guy. Cause you could, it's not a luxury pick necessarily, but it's all right, we have extra picks, so we could swing on it. Oh, this receiver fell to the third round. That fits our need because we need somebody to go alongside Brian Thomas, or tight end, because now you don't have Evan Ingram anymore, and Brenton Strange probably isn't your answer. So there's, when you have draft capital like that in the middle rounds, I like that. I like that a lot because you could take some swings on guys instead of trying to fill needs.
Yeah. And from a fantasy perspective, I think this is going to be one of the better like value ecosystems out there. So any of these offensive guys, running backs, pass catchers, as you mentioned, we should be interested in those players. Because, yeah, the reality is, draft's a bit of a crapshoot. You know how you increase your odds of hitting? You take more swings at it. You have more draft picks. Yep. That applies to the Jaguars, and it applies to the second team that you want to talk about here as well. The Dallas Cowboys are also one of the teams with 10 picks this year. The only teams with more than 10 are, of course, the Ravens and the 49ers. The Niners get compensatory picks every year because of like their coaching staffs getting and in front office getting raided, but they also lose players and things like that. And the Ravens obviously are the matches of the comp pick formula. But again, the Jaguars and the Cowboys, who you want to bring up here, they also have 10 plus picks, or they have 10 picks.
And everybody rolling their eyes, Cowboys. Oh my God, we got to talk about the Cowboys. And I don't really love talking about the Cowboys. Don't tell the bosses. But
I was going to say, did producer Colin put you up to this? I know you guys exchanged a lot of messages figuring out the time we were going to do this show.
I'm going to hold up a newspaper like there's a hostage situation. Yeah, but no, because it's easy to just dunk on the Cowboys, right? Oh, they stink, whatever. This is a team that won 12 games three seasons in a row. Did they have a bad season last year? Yeah, they did. That was terrible. But they weren't even to the point of like the Giants, like, or the Titans. Like, they were still competitive with that team. And I still think the core is there, that this is not a terrible football team, but what they do need is a big draft. Mm-hmm. They need to get difference makers on offense. That's the way I look at it. There's other needs. Cornerback is one of them now. They got kind of picked apart in free agency that way. Anything on their defense would help, especially with Overshown kind of out at linebacker, although they've added some veterans there. Offensive line is always an issue, especially with Zach Martin stepping away. But I view this team, they're picking 12th. Genty falls to them. And I don't think he will, but what if he does? Or McMillan out of Arizona as a receiver, or whatever receiver you like might be there at number 12. Like, I just think that they need somebody other than CeeDee Lamb on this offense. Like,
yeah.
You just look at the kind of ecosystem of this offense and you're like, all right, who is it besides Lamb getting 200 some odd targets? Like, it's got to be somebody else. But what if they do add Hampton? What if they do add, because that's kind of the Jerry pick too, right? He likes the splashy picks like that.
Mel Kiper has been mocking that Hampton pick for, I mean, weeks now, Hampton at 12.
And we could see it, right? You could see it. I don't think it's crazy, do you?
I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I love it, just because I do think Dallas is in a position where, I agree with you, they have good players here, but they're about to be very top heavy. Like, they're about to be the same team they've been for a while and haven't won a Super Bowl, and they're about to be very top heavy because they're paying Dak, they're paying CeeDee, and at some point, probably like 2 days before week one, they're going to pay Micah Parsons a bunch of money too, after, you know, a bunch of weird offseason headlines and tweets and, you know, whatever. That deal will get done, and if you decide to engage in that sort of content, you just love gossip, I guess. But again, they need to hit on some young players at premium positions, and that's the only reason I don't love the Hampton pick. I think the player is great. The player fit for this team would be really good. He'd give them some juice. Yeah, I just think, like,
I do too.
You need some, and I mentioned
they have 1,000 yards out of Rico Dowdle last year.
Yeah, and didn't have
what
any
can
interest
it do,
in bringing
like Hampton being that offense.
Yeah,
and you, yeah, right. I thought that was weird too. But I just look at this team as like, if you could add a real true difference maker, they could have the type of draft where we're sitting there on Saturday, as the kind of day three is going on, and we're like, wow, that ended up really well for the Cowboys, even if it's receiver first round and a second round they get one of the Ohio State running backs or something like that. You're like, all of a sudden this offense has a lot more juice. I know that that's, look, honestly, the way you should draft in the NFL's trenches, mm-hmm. and then your skill position guys later, whatever. But if they do have a splashy draft like that, it still could help them, because I think that's what they need. They don't have a lot of offensive talent outside of CeeDee Lamb, but if you add two starters mm-hmm. in your first two rounds at receiver or running back, I think we'd look at this Cowboys team completely differently. And people will still dunk on them because they're Cowboys. Sure. But again, 12 wins in 3 straight seasons. This is not a terrible football team by any means.
Yeah, I agree that you kind of just leave the defense alone and just hope Matt Eberflus is kind of the adult in the room there. Micah Parsons was so good last year when he was on the field. You bring back like Dante
Fowler.
You just
keep him healthy for a year.
Yeah. You bring back Odighizuwa. Dante Fowler's back in the mix.
That was a big time. You talk, like I talked about Alaric Jackson before. That was a big time guy they got back. I didn't think there was any way Cowboys were getting him back, but they found the money to do it. And kudos. Like, that's the kind of move you got to make a free agency, keeping your own.
Yeah, probably need a corner at some point here, especially if you don't think Diggs, you know, Kyrie Elam can't be the answer if Diggs is not going to play there. But that's sort of the only real, like, screaming need on defense. And otherwise, like, we can hit offense pretty hard in this draft, and I think that would look good. I mentioned they have 10 picks. They have a bunch of day three picks. They have 2 picks in the 5th round, 3 picks in the 7th round, 2 picks in the 6th round. They don't have a 4th rounder. So, Maybe move up.
Like, a couple of those picks would be easy. I don't want a ton of 5th and 6th and 7ths. Like, package some picks, move up. Somebody wants to move down and get some extra capital, fine. Okay, I could totally see that.
I like that call. Frank, I always like talking football with you, man. This was fantastic. Tell the people what you are working on heading into the draft, all the things they can check out.
Just general draft stuff, waiting on Aaron Rodgers too, like the rest of the world. That's always fun. We're all on call. We're all on call until Aaron, the NFL executives, the NFL writers, we're all on call until Aaron Rodgers makes up his mind. But yeah, looking forward to this draft. It'll be fun once again. I love coming on talking to you, man. It's always a blast talking ball with you. And I appreciate you reaching out and having me on.
Absolutely, buddy. We'll definitely do it more during the summer as things get ramped up here. In the meantime, make sure you check out Frank on Inside Coverage. Great podcast. I know he's got to run and do an episode right now of that show. So make sure you subscribe to Inside Coverage with him and Jason Fitz, Jory Epstein, Charles Robinson, the whole gang there. It's a great show. You guys should check it out. For now, that is going to do it for today's show on this podcast feed. On Thursday, we got a treat. Charles McDonald is going to be back to continue our draft deep dive series, and we're going to be looking at wide receivers. Yes, the wide receiver position. We're going to go live. So bookmark this right now. We're going to go live on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. I mean, my God, Facebook. We're going to be live on Facebook at 11 a.m. Eastern. So make sure you bookmark that. Just watch. If you're listening to this, if you're watching it on YouTube, just watch on YouTube. Okay, that's going to be the best way to do it. You can get in the chat, interact with us, whatever. We're going to preview the whole wide receiver position at 11 a.m. Eastern, so make sure you bookmark that. Until then, we are out.